4:23. I think that know we've got to get Sean done today, which is on the Angostura concession plan. And maybe, Sean, if you're online or available, we'll take you next, and then we'll come back up and start with you, Jake, after that. Sean, are you with us?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for squeezing me in here today. So this item will just be a follow-up from our discussion last week, and we are ready to make a request for your authorization today. Just to brief you, we have a concession contract down at Angostura that is set to expire at the end of this year. So we are in the time frame that we need to issue a prospectus for a new lease opportunity down there. As we discussed last month, we had some issues that arose regarding the appraisal that we had done last fall, and those issues were in regards to some of the cabins within the rental complex there. There were three that at the beginning of this current lease were designated as timeshares. One of those had been transferred over to the concession operation and ownership that had not been made aware of, where we had not been made aware of until just recently. And then we also had two that were still in timeshare ownership that we needed to have some discussions with the concessionaire and come to some sort of resolution regarding those cabins. And so where we have settled is we have included all three of them now in the appraisal report. So all three will now be lumped into the concession leasehold. The possessory interest is how it is formally referred to. And so we've rectified that in the appraisal. We have an updated supplemental report to that original appraisal that includes these three cabins. And that valuation came back at $2,550,000 for the entire possessory interest of that concession operation. So where we're at today is we are in the process of negotiating terms of a settlement agreement with the concessionaire that basically would set the stage for a closing in anticipation of finding a new operator or a new concessionaire in the event that we get proposals to do such. And that settlement agreement would be included in the prospectus that we need to issue. Some important points about that appraised value is it will be set in the prospectus. It is not a negotiable price. Anybody who offers a proposal for this opportunity must agree to that price. So it's not a case of, you know, highest financial bidder wins. It's really set on the proposal to provide the services at Angostura. So with that, I'll just give you a basic background of the concession operation as it sits today. They include a marina that has roughly 140 slips that are located in three different areas on Angostura Reservoir. There's a resort complex with six rental cabins and a manager's residence there. As I said, all six of those under the proposed sale would be converted from timeshare ownership now to all open and available to public rental. Within the main marina complex, there's a floating convenience store, and nearby on the beach is a Breakers beachside food and beverage service. They also offer on-the-water fuel sales, and then there are also two private exclusive cabin, or I'm sorry, trailer, seasonal trailer areas, with a total of up to 86 trailer lots that they rent out and issue the permits on. So as I said, we're currently in the process of negotiating out that settlement agreement and developing the prospectus that we would like to issue. The prospectus will include a draft concession agreement. And normally what we do when we get authorization is we just go over the major recommended minimum terms of a contract that we would offer for the public opportunity. So I'll just go through those quickly. As with most concession agreements, we're looking at offering a term of 10 years total for the opportunity with the required minimum services. Would be kept the same as what exists there now. So 150, or I'm sorry, 140 rental boats, The six housekeeping cabins that we talked about open for public rental, the floating convenience store, the food service, the on the water fuel sales, and then the two private exclusive trailer areas. We are not looking to reduce any services there. We haven't identified a need for any immediate new expansions. That could come about, but as far as a minimum requirement, we are looking to continue the services that exist there today. The fee structure is another major component. We're looking to just carry forward the current fee structure that we have there, being the franchise fee of 5.5% on gross receipts, except for gas sales and revenues from a number of docks that are attached to a department-owned floating breakwater structure. Those particular docks, we assess a 35% franchise fee to help us recoup maintenance costs and those sorts of things on that structure that we see every year. And then 3 cents per gallon of gasoline sold. We also charge, or I shouldn't say charge, we have established a sewer assessment fee that is an annual $880 payment that is required to be collected by the concessionaire from each of the trailer permit holders in the two trailer areas. This fee originated at the onset of the current lease when we went through a process and completely upgraded the wastewater systems in those trailer areas. And the department was able to do that through a bond issuance, and that is a long-term bond. So we do have a long-term obligation to pay that off. And the sewer assessment fee is what was put in place to help, or basically to cover the bond payment for that portion of the project that services those trailer areas. We do have a repair and maintenance reserve down there at Angostura of 2%. And again, we're looking to just continue that percentage forward in the new lease. So that's a basic rundown of, you know, the appraisal and the services that we're looking to offer to the public at in a new concession lease. The prospectus, when advertised, would require the successor to purchase all the facilities that are included in the possessory interest at the appraised value of $2,550,000. We are looking to advertise this and get it on the street sometime in the next 2 weeks for roughly about 60 days. And that would give us a deadline to receive proposals sometime in mid-September, which then we could be back at the October meeting to report what we received in response to that issuance. So again, this is all subject to your approval per administrative rule. We would need your approval to issue the prospectus with the opportunity at the appraised value of the possessory interest and with the minimum requirements of a new concession lease as was described during the presentation. So if there are any questions, I would take those now. Otherwise, like I said, the action that we would need from you today is authorization to move forward with that advertisement.
Okay,
does
anybody have any questions for Sean? It was a good report. I'd like to entertain a motion to issue the prospectus. It's a motion by Bees. Seconded by Bartling. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Sean. Right.
Thank you again, commissioners.
We'll go back up to Jake. I think you're going to take care of all the fishing rig stuff for us. A through F, all on your own. I was told you're flying solo.
I am, yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, Secretary Roebling. Nope.
How's that? Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator, and much to Scott's surprise, recent graduate of the department's LDP program. But what I've got for you this afternoon is really the result of the Aquatics Commission Rules Development Process. This is a department-wide process that started this spring, essentially a brainstorming session, and then we pared it down from there. And what I have in front of you today is 9 recommended changes within 4 action sheets. So with that, we'll just take it one by one. The first one, I believe, is on page 47 of the commission book. We have 3 recommended changes. The first one is dealing with repealing actually the administrative rule that requires that ice fishing shelters essentially need to be removed from waters of the state by the last day of February. Now, they can still be out there after this point currently, however, they need to be removed daily. What this causes, though, are certainly years like this year where ice conditions persist past that date and there's a desire by the public to continue to keep their ice fishing shelters on the lakes longer. One of the reasons that it was in place was the concern of shacks and shelters essentially being abandoned out there and turning into trash and refuse on these waters. However, staff feels now, especially with the economic value of some of the structures that are out there, this really isn't something that is going to come to fruition. Additionally, in years when ice deteriorates before this date, users have been getting out there and retrieving their shacks prior to ice conditions getting poor enough where they would essentially, they'd still legally be able to have their shelters out there, but they would essentially be inaccessible. So with this, we feel that it puts more on the user, but it provides more flexibility for users to either keep their shacks out longer. Additionally, we have run into issues when the date is getting to the point they need to start removing these shacks and conditions are very tough to get to them, whether it's a large amount of snow or something, and it causes problems because really all of a sudden we're forcing folks to try and access areas they may not be able to retrieve these shacks. So staff feels like by removing this date, we provide the users with more flexibility. And again, that concern that shacks would be abandoned on the ice really isn't something that would come to fruition. So that's the first recommended change on this. Number two is just removing some language that references legal sayings for taking of smelt and liberalized chapter referring to liberalized take of carp, smelt and lake herring. The reason we're doing this is last year we removed the size restrictions for legal seines and nets in regards to non-commercial take of bait. So with that, there is no restriction for seines in regards to taking of smelt for non-commercial bait. So essentially, it's just kind of cleaning up a rule reference because it says that, you know, refers to another rule on legal sizes and those were lifted or repealed last year. So essentially just cleaning that language up. And then the third one on this is regarding two minimum length limits for large and smallmouth bass in South Dakota waters. The first one would be to repeal a 15-inch minimum that's on Burke Lake in Gregory County. The way that staff evaluate these regulations are through annual surveys and then looking at different metrics within those, essentially size, structure, and abundance of fish populations during these annual surveys. What staff has seen at Burke Lake is that the population, this regulation has been in place for quite a while. They have not seen a positive benefit within the population in either size or growth and abundance. So staff feels like by removing this regulation, it does increase opportunity because it would allow for harvest of smaller bass. And in the end, they feel like that would benefit the overall population. Now, conversely, on Lake Mitchell, staff feels like by implementing a 15-inch minimum, this would positively benefit the fishery. What they're seeing in their standard surveys now are that abundance is down over the last couple of years. Now, interestingly, Lake Mitchell had a 15-inch minimum that was removed in 2018. And since that time, what they've noticed is that that population has appeared to have a negative turn to it. We don't have that information as far as harvest, but it's very likely that harvest is one of the limiting factors. By placing this 15-inch minimum on that fishery, the hope is that it will limit harvest or essentially eliminate harvest on those smaller bass, allowing them to get to a higher size structure and increase overall abundance within the lake. So it's interesting, we have one 15-inch minimum that we're looking to remove and one that we're looking to add on. But again, it's coming from these two smaller systems that do operate very differently, and all that information is coming from staff's annual population surveys. So with that, I can take any questions on this first action sheet on any of the items.
Any questions for Jake? Okay. Want us to just action these out or as you go?
Sure, if that's easiest for you.
Yeah. I think so. I'd entertain a motion to accept the first action sheet. Motion by Whitmire, seconded by Bartling. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Jake.
All right. Thank you very much. Next one is on page 50 of your commission book, dealing with importation of fish. And so we do have a fish importation permit process. Before fish can be imported, they've got to go through some steps. We have a fish health specialist. But what we're doing here is actually cleaning up some of the rules and referencing what pathogens of concern that we have, because we do define those in rule. We just don't state it very clearly in this administrative rule what we're looking for that may essentially cause for the denial of an importation permit. So what we're doing here, again, it's kind of a rule cleanup, but the big thing is just more clearly stating what pathogens of regulatory concern are, because we do define those in administrative rule. So it just makes it hopefully more clear to anybody essentially what we're looking for and what we would have an issue with during an inspection or fish health. Yes, sir.
Define fish import. Am I bringing it into my private pond? Am I bringing it in from out of state to consumer?
Yeah, so for example, one would be there's a private hatchery in Wyoming that produces cutthroat trout. And so if there's an individual that's looking to apply for a permit to stock a public water in South Dakota in the Black Hills, for example, cutthroat trout, they would first need to obtain that importation permit because they would be coming from out of state.
Okay, thanks.
That's all I have on that sheet. So,
further questions for Jake on that one? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve. Motion by Bees, seconded by Ressler. That we have any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
All right. Next action sheet I have for you is on page 52 of your commission book. This is dealing with hoop nets, traps, set lines, and float lines. One of the first things that we're looking at changing is actually reducing the trap check time down from 72 hours. This was brought up from staff because for one reason, some of our neighboring states have it reduced down to 24 hours. So it would help standardize between states. But additionally, the thought is that it would help reduce bycatch. So on some of these, they do catch non-target species such as turtles. And the idea being a lower trap check time, it would reduce mortality on some of those non-targeted species. Now I have on here 24 hours, but really the way that we wrote it is similar to trap checking time on the terrestrial side, where it'd be midnight on the second day. So there is potential that traps would potentially sit for over 24 hours, but that was just simply to help standardize trap checking time between terrestrial and aquatic and hopefully help with interpretation and then law enforcement as well. But that was the impetus there. And then also talking with staff that know some individuals that do these activities, the thought was that most of these individuals were just simply running what we would call an overnight 24-hour set to begin with anyway. And then the second one would be to modify some of the language on how a user could help run traps, hoops, set lines, and float lines. The idea being that someone couldn't help run those gears unless the licensee was present. So an example would be a family member helping run a set line or float line. And for example, float lines, they need to be under observational view all the time, but there's still, you can have up to 10 of them. So the idea being that you could have an unlicensed person help run those 10 as long as a licensee is present. So just kind of help clear up some of the language, because there are times that whether it's family members that are out helping or groups of individuals that all have set line licenses or float line licenses, that you have a group of them running a series of these types of gears. So just kind of hoping to help clear up some of the information on those. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions on that sheet.
Any questions from Jake on that
question?
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmer.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, on the traps, does that also affect the commercial fish minnow traps, guys? You know, that does not. Okay, thank you, because the daily check, everybody needs a weekend now. Yeah, right? Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion. Motion by Ristler, seconded by Bees. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
All right, thank you. On to the last one. So first two deal with our paddlefish seasons. And then we have one dealing with persons with disabilities chapter. The first recommended change would be to remove the ZZ1 unit for paddlefish, essentially similar to what's being done on the terrestrial side, where it's a preference point only unit. Well, we don't have those anymore. They can obtain a preference point during the preference point purchase period in the fall. So this would just be essentially striking all language similar to what was done on hunting seasons, because that preference point unit will not exist anymore. The second one is in two of our paddlefish seasons to add the use of crossbows. Currently, you can use hand-drawn bows during the archery seasons. There was some interest from the public to include crossbows. After visiting with staff, they felt it was comfortable. Additionally, Nebraska allows crossbows, so there would be some standardization with our neighboring states and border waters. So essentially just hopefully increasing some opportunity. Again, the areas that this would happen, there are already hand-drawn bows that are legal for it. So it'd simply be allowing another method of take within those seasons. And then the final unit would be to provide a permit to allow assistance for a disabled angler. Really where this did kind of stem from was somebody looking to get some assistance during the paddlefish snagging season, where they did not have the physical ability to land a paddlefish if once snagged. However, the way that it's drafted right now, it would apply to any lawful fishing activity. And so any individual that has a physical or mental disability would be allowed to have another individual assist them with lawful fishing activities. So that's where the way that we drafted it. Again, the example came from paddlefish snagging, but the way that we have it drafted, the scope is increased to include all lawful fishing activities.
Jake, did that change come from the two gentlemen that came a few meetings ago? And
Mr. Chair, yes, at the April Commission meeting, that really helped stimulate the discussion. I believe that was in Watertown.
Yeah, that's a good win for staff. When somebody brings an issue to us, we say we're going to work on it, and boom, here we are before the summer's over getting a change for them. So.
Absolutely. And again, we feel very good, too, in the fact that we were able to increase the scope outside of simply just paddlefish snagging to include all other forms of lawful angling as well.
One other thing, kind of unrelated to this, but while we're on paddle fishing, why don't we have a season at Bixtown?
Boy, I wish Chris Longhenry was here to help me out on that. That's one, to be honest, I can talk with staff and get a better answer and follow up with you. I can tell you right now that some of the new seasons that we're looking at might include other areas on the river. We're just in Lake Sharp, to be honest. But I can certainly follow up with staff and get you an answer.
Any other questions for Jake? If not, I'd entertain a motion. Commissioner Lockin?
Someone.
I thought you were going to make that motion. Seconded by Commissioner Whitmire. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you.
That'll take us back up to things where to be leaving.